the Salyer Report. Today is November 21st, 2019. This is Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this week. I just arrived in Texas tonight after a trip from Tennessee up to Portland, down to the Medford area, and then down to Carson City in Nevada, where I've been for several days, and long drive through the snow in Arizona and northern New Mexico. Events. So we had a great event in Portland. The next one is in Malvern, Pennsylvania, outside of Philadelphia on December 20th. And then, of course, the Lake Constance Opera Hang next year in August 2020. Check out the website. You can link from the homepage. It's at lakeconstanceopera.salyer.com. If you have any questions for customer support, or you can send them to Ask Catherine. A little note about cybersecurity, because this is coming up more and more. Several items. AT&T, we're now on our third block. AT&T, starting about 2 years ago, blocked us for 15 months. It took 15 months to get off the list. They could never give us a reason why we were on it. Then they blocked us. Literally, the hacking rose dramatically when I returned from Europe, and it was accompanied with an AT&T block. After 3 days, they responded to our request and unblocked us. And then voila, just a few days ago, the third block went on. There are still a small number of subscribers who use an AT&T domain or the domain of any of the companies they've purchased. It's in our article about why we recommend you not use AT&T. But what you need to understand is it's not just that they're blocking Salieri. They are censoring content that you have requested that you receive and not telling you that they're doing it, when in fact you are paying them for a service. So I would strongly recommend, if you are one of the, and it's still just a small number of subscribers who do business with AT&T, we have a rule at Salieri, nobody can give a check to AT&T without my written permission. And unfortunately, because in some of the rural areas, they have literally a monopoly, we find ourselves constantly having to deal with them. So I appreciate how the challenge can arise, but please be extremely careful and do everything you can to have alternatives to AT&T. You can have a second email at Proton or Start Mail and use that for your Salieri Report subscription. The second is the firewall blocking. We've had several complaints about our firewall blocking access. Several of them were because people were using an invalid password, and if you use it more than 4 or 5 times, then you'll be automatically locked out. It's real simple. Just go request a new password if that should happen to you, and you can click at the top of the website to do that. However, two of the people blocked were not blocked for invalid password. They have Microsoft systems and had viruses. And so the virus, without your realizing it, is going to try and hack the website. And so we block it. It's very simple. If you're still using Microsoft, you need to switch. It exposes you to ransomware, all sorts of viruses that other systems are not as susceptible. So one of our colleagues, I just recommended they switch out of the Microsoft operating system to Ubuntu desktop for operating, and then I always recommend LibreOffice for the work suite. That's what I use. We at the Salieri team uses, for our virus software, we use Clam, which should work with Microsoft or a Microsoft-based system as much as an Apple. It should work for both. Anyway, but anything you can do to get off Microsoft, I think, will significantly protect or improve your cybersecurity. The next thing is, on this trip, I've gotten reports from several people that they're seeing an explosion of the Internet of Things in houses, so Alexa machines and use of Siri and Wi-Fi and digital TVs, and essentially you're turning your home into a 24-hour surveillance where multiple cameras are watching you, recording everything you do and say. And it's important for you to understand that these systems can and will be linked with organized crime and Operation Gladio type teams, particularly if we get into very dire economic situation. It's just not safe. And yet we all seem to be in a trance about, you know, these are friendly, helpful systems that are good for us. YouTube censorship is increasing. I'm trying to encourage our allies to have alternative plans because there's a real frightening dependency on YouTube. Our main video channel is Vimeo. We have posted things as a secondary backup on YouTube, but we don't depend on it, and we're bringing up our own video server because ultimately our concern is that Vimeo will also be pressured. The environment is increasingly risky. I'm going to bring up security in several ways today, but please do not invite strangers into your intimate space using digital systems. I just posted a headline this week, like some we've posted several of these over the last 6 months. This one, scientists decode human thoughts and emotions using MRI and computer analysis. So again, anything you can do to keep this technology away from you or be careful. I'm highly dependent, and the Silly Report right now is highly dependent on the internet, so I understand the challenges of using this technology and really having too much screen time. So I know we're all struggling with it, but again, cybersecurity is, the dangers coming from the absence of secure systems is rising, and you need to be very, very careful. Wrap-ups, I hope to have the PDF for the ESG turn the red button green next week, and then send it off to the printer either next week or the following. ESG stands for Environmental Social Responsibility and Governance. It's extremely important to me that you understand what's happening in this area. I think it's another tool of centralization, and it's going to be used in connection with climate change to really implement technocracy. And I think the way to manage that tsunami is to see it coming. So I really think that this one can help you, particularly if you're an investor or an investment advisor or deal in any respect with the investment world. Our theme tonight is Putin predicts the dollar will collapse soon. Let me say that again. Putin predicts, and this was at a Russian conference, that the dollar will collapse soon. He was also pushing a similar scenario at the BRICS conference in Brazil. Interestingly enough, the G20 or the BRICS conference, Putin and Russia is going to be the chairman next year. So it'll be held in St. Petersburg. So we're going to see a real flourishing of Russia here. Let me say exactly what Putin said. He said, quote, "The dollar enjoyed great trust around the world, but for some reason it is being used as a political weapon, imposing restrictions. Many countries are now turning away from the dollar as reserve currency. The U.S. dollar will collapse soon." Interestingly enough, Putin is saying exactly what I've been saying for the last several years, that economic sanctions and weaponizing the dollar will kill the goose that laid the golden egg. I confirmed with the Saker that Putin really did say this, that it wasn't a deep fake video, which is always the danger. What was interesting is after I posted the video both on Twitter and put the link on the website, the video was edited so that the comment, "the U.S. dollar will collapse soon," was edited out. So today when I looked at it, it was gone, whereas the first time I looked at it, it was there. It was very spooky. If we were going to try and predict, if I was going to try and predict the trajectory of dollar decline as reserve currency, And when I say reserve currency, I mean both its market share in terms of global reserves, particularly central bank reserves, as well as vehicle for trade, including trade in oil. So if I was going to determine the trajectory of dollar decline, there were several things I would need to know. One is the speed of development of alternative payment systems, and Russia's and China have been in the lead on alternative payment systems. The second is the military preparations to defend against U.S. efforts to enforce sanctions and enforce the things that keep the dollar as reserve currency. So whether it's the payment systems or the state of military balance of power, those are the two critical intelligence we would need to make any kind of intelligent prediction. Now, interestingly enough, Putin has access to the information and we do not. But Putin's also talking his book. So the Russians have basically ditched their dollar reserves. They switched their reserves to gold. That started in 2005 when Putin's advisor came to the gold conference in the Yukon. We've been talking about it ever since. They're trying to build alternatives to SWIFT. They've done a lot to increase self-sufficiency as a result of the sanctions, and they're promoting the UN and sort of global systems. When Putin got up at the BRICS meeting and started to pump the ruble as an alternative to the dollar, he clearly knew he was overreaching. He seemed a little bit embarrassed to do it, but did it anyway. But he didn't sound like someone who thought the dollar was going to collapse shortly. So he's talking his book and clearly has very significant conflicts of interest. So is he a reliable source when he says the dollar will collapse, let alone the dollar will collapse soon? No, he's not a reliable source. At the same time, Putin has not been one to bluff on an issue like this, but he's clearly trying to attract support. Now, there's no doubt that Trump's pivot to North America and his manner of managing allies, combined with the completely ridiculous get Trump tactics of the Russian canard and now the impeachment and the related media for the last 3 years, has accelerated the desire to move away from the U.S. and away from the dollar in many, many quarters, particularly Europe, where the cancellation of the Iran deal really put the Europeans over the barrel and accelerated sort of an effort to get around SWIFT. So there's a combination of things happening here that's making it increasingly attractive for people who normally wouldn't want to have to try and deal with, okay, how are we going to build new train tracks? Really making it impossible for them not to want to do it. When you're sitting in Europe and watching what the Democrats have been doing for the last 3 years, you really feel like America's not under adult supervision. And that's not just Trump. It's a significant number of the media players and for example, the whole Epstein affair. So America just does not look like it's under adult supervision. And that's a very broad phenomena. Now, the comments from Putin are backed up by the recent comments from Carney and Macron. And it just reinforces the fact that many, many forces are looking to look for a global reserve currency that doesn't have political sanctions related to to one particular player. What that means is that you and I need to be prepared if we are both in a dollar-based currency country. So if you're in the United States, but if your currency pegs off the dollar, whether it's the Canadian dollar or throughout the Commonwealth, you need to be prepared if the dollar trade seriously declines or the value seriously declines. You need to be prepared for, in the best case, rising inflation. So if household goods are going up at 10% a year, that could increase significantly. So it could start going up at 15, 20. The worst case, of course, is implosion. And we're talking about unwinding the mother of all global bubbles, if that should happen. I'm going to do a scenario in the annual wrap-up for scenario planning. One of our variables is going to be dollar decline, and we'll take a serious look at what implosion could look like. It could get pretty bad. I'm writing the state of our currencies, which was our second quarter wrap-up theme now. So it's a very appropriate time to be focused on currencies. So more in state of currencies, and then also I'm writing take action. And that'll get into the kind of take actions you need to take. And again, the scenario designed for the annual wrap-up. So more there. The big issue is not where do you put your money. The big issue is how are you going to be secure? Because we have wacky activists. Obviously, the politicians concerned about hyperinflation are looking to do massive demand destruction, all in the name of the climate change op. So you got wacky activists, you've got drug gangs, you've got people who are not able to cope. I've heard very chilling stories about what's going on in California, PG&E, because you have power outages that are putting, people really at risk, massive inconvenience, putting lots of small business out of business or certainly severely hurting them. But in the face of that, you have people who are not used to having to live with power outages or fundamental breakdowns in infrastructure, and they're literally not able to cope. Now, this coming week in the United States is Thanksgiving. And so for those of us living in the developed world who've enjoyed many, many years of relative peace and prosperity, we still have a lot to give thanks for. And I think we should give thanks for all the peace that we've enjoyed. And with that, the appreciation that can hopefully nourish our commitment to create that kind of future. Civilization is much more fragile than many of us understand. We've had the opportunity of taking it for granted for many, many decades. And I think it will be harder to take it for granted in the future. And that's why it's important that every one of us commit to try and create the conditions that will nurture it. I get to spend my Thanksgiving this year in Texas with some of my finest folks I know. And after a long road trip to Portland, where I met many wonderful subscribers, remember to give thanks for allies everywhere. The most important assets on the road ahead are not dollars or gold coins, but they're people you can count on. Our future depends on family and community. Those are the building blocks of civilization. So remember to give thanks for those people in your life. Money and markets. For all the talk of dollar collapse, the dollar's up 2.26%. It's still strong. If you look at the currency charts, and I put the link in the notes, the dollar's up against the euro, it's up against the yuan, it's down slightly against the Swiss franc. Poor Swiss, the people keep wanting Swiss francs, but they have no way of putting the money out. In part, the U.S. bear trap is working to keep the dollar supported. We've lent massive amounts of dollars around the globe. And now as the economy slows down, people need dollars to carry that debt. Fixed income, the long treasury TLT is up 17.3%. Intermediate up 9.18%. Bond aggregate up 8.46%. And the junk at 11.82%, all backing off just a little bit. Rates for the year clearly have trended lower. See the Treasury yield curve. I put the link in the notes. Lots of questions about negative interest rates. Negative interest rates is essentially taxation on savings. It subsidizes the government borrowing and corporate monopolies, though it generally does it by entities that are really committed and are required to buy big bond positions. If you're interested, when we did Planet Debt in the 2015 first quarter wrap-up, I referenced a McKinsey study. You can find it on the McKinsey Global website, so it's fairly old, I think 2012 to 2014 timeframe. But they calculated how much government had been subsidized at the cost of savers using lower negative interest rates. But we're seeing money pour in. Money pours into U.S. corporate debt, despite warnings, as a headline in the Financial Times this week. Angola raised $3 billion from YieldStar bond investors. Oh, my God. This is a big transfer of wealth out of the pension funds and insurance companies and the related bond funds into, as I said, cheap government and large company financing, in essence, more centralization. It's one way to get to socialism, just print money off a computer and use it to buy everything, unfortunately. Headline this week, the most responsible pension fund system I've ever found on the globe is the Netherlands pension funds. And headlines that if the Netherlands wanted to stay at 100% funding, they would have to cut pension fund benefits to millions of retirees. Another alternative on the table is to move to 90%. Now, in the United States, a 90% ratio would be considered glorious. So it would be hard for an American pension fund leader to think of this as a crisis. But if you've run the system as responsibly as the folks in the Netherlands has, I'm sure this is not a day that they were hoping for. But that's the pain that negative interest rates can cause. I think it's very unlikely for the Fed to move to negative interest rates in the foreseeable future. They don't have the Swiss problem, given the appetite of the U.S. government to borrow more money. You know, the problem the Swiss have is demand for their debt is far greater than their need for debt proceeds. Anyway, I think it's very possible the Fed could go to zero by next year and be buying treasuries at a zero or negative rates to monetize Treasury spending, but I don't think they want to see negative interest rates on a wider basis. They certainly know what it's doing to the pension funds and insurance companies, and that's a problem that they don't want to have. So I think they're going to do everything they can to delay or prevent that. Essentially, though, what we have is a money printing system that's printing just money out of thin air and then using it to centralize ownership and control of everything. When you print money and do this many things to drain productivity, it becomes hard to invest money in productive things. You can't put the money out. And the problem's not monetary or fiscal policy. It's the absence of the rule of law and the resulting absence of markets. Now, many, you know, an Austrian economist might say, okay, well, the thing that destroyed and debased the rule of law was unsound money. And it's hard to debate which came first, the chicken or the egg, but unsound money and the absence of the rule of law are connected and go hand to hand. And we're going to need a sound money system, and we're going to need the rule of law, and the question is how to get there. The best way to protect yourself is to invest in all things that make you resilient. Refinance others locally. Invest locally if there are opportunities there. If your bank is paying you 1% and your household goods are going up at 10 or 20% a year, it's no-brainer to buy and stockpile real goods forward. Finance your own energy and water solutions. Take a look at what's happening at PG&E out in California. The people who built their own energy systems are not having power outages. The people who have their own well and have enough electricity to get the water out of a well are not running into problems. Invest in your own tools, your own skills and businesses. Pay off your debt. Refinance your trustworthy siblings and kids. A lot of people have untrustworthy siblings and kids, so you have to be careful, but you can refinance them out of their mortgages. And you're going to have to find a way to build and invest in your own ecosystem. Now, there are plenty of solid companies and real estate around, but you're going to have to keep it real. One of the investments I love, if the opportunity is there, is buying farmland and leasing to the young farmers who are willing to grow your food or raise livestock for you. Precious metals, I believe, will be reliable. Remember, U.S. junk silver, for those of you in the United States, is legal tender. And it's a perfect way to make the smaller transactions. Gold, obviously, is for larger transactions. We've been publishing the best of the precious metals slurry report, so if you want to go back and look at some of the basics on precious metals, it's all there in that series. We'll have more for you later early next year. Equities, S&P now up 25.88%, big headline on Yahoo Finance. Farm bankruptcies increasing, stock market running ahead of GDP. You know, this can only happen in a FASB 56 society. God knows what the real accounts are in the corporate profits. You really wonder. The stock market running this far ahead of GDP when the agriculture sector is dropping behind, very bad sign. The OECD in Paris has lowered its economic forecast, pointing out that China growth will not bail out the world economy, which is what happened at the end of the financial crisis, and they bailed out the world economy by levering up tremendously. So now China's, you know, got debt up to its eyeballs. The European ETF VGK up 18.66%, EWG, the German ETF up 17.05%, developed markets ETF EFA up 17.81%, China large caps up 7%, small caps up 8.58%, emerging markets up 10.59%. So it's clearly an inflation message because the real assets are outperforming. Moody's downgraded the outlook for the German banking system. There's no doubt that Deutsche Bank is a real concern within the financial system. There is a meeting this week between Trump and Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, and the question was, what was an unscheduled meeting between the president and the chairman of the Federal Reserve about how the Fed is handling the problems with the European banking sector? The commodities index now up 6.43%. That absolutely indicates a sort of softening in the global economy. Gold up 13.81%, silver up 10.12%, underperforming the stock market, but I think it has a stronger floor on it. Oil up 37.16%. Top stories, very good news. Benjamin Netanyahu, having lost the election and failed to put together a coalition government, has now been indicted in Israel. He's charged with bribery, fraud, breach of trust. I'll be perfectly blunt. If there was a rule of law, in my opinion, Benjamin Netanyahu would have been indicted for 9/11. You know, I think the the perpetrators were not a group of Muslims. I would bet you a dollar that Netanyahu was right at the center of that particular false flag conspiracy. I think he was critical to initiating the 7 regime changes in 5-year plan. And as a political matter, my question is, he being indicted for the failure of the unipolar model execution. Trump is clearly trying to protect himself against impeachment by being wonderful to Israel. And you wonder whether his latest announcement that the Israeli settlements in the Gaza are not illegal, basically U.S. getting on board for a one-state solution and saying to the Palestinians, you're on your own. It reminds me of the Clinton impeachment when then-President Clinton gave away Glass-Steagall, the sun, the moon, and the stars. And you kind of wonder to what extent the impeachment has Trump in the corner up against the ropes. And the question is, who's getting what out of rope-a-doping him? So Israel clearly is getting their pound of flesh, and I hate to say it, it reminds me very much of the same sense that the same networks were doing the same to Clinton during that impeachment. One way or another, the pushback on the failure of the unipolar model execution is going to come back to haunt Israel. There's just a headline this week. It's up on the website. Harvard students walk out of Israel envoy talk. Just a reminder that karma means you don't get away with anything. We did a Salieri report several years ago called Mapping Your Local Ecosystem. Dr. Bingham, who helped me do it, was out at the Portland Group, and we talked about doing another one. But I really encourage you to go back and listen to that. The Omaha, Nebraska article on the PG&E power outage, which is up on the website, is a very sobering. And the pain that is caused to small business and families and everyone in the power outage area is very, very serious. And of course, if you're mapping your local ecosystems and you understand what entities you're dependent on and whether or not you need to have redundancy or resiliency, you won't get surprised at these things. I was just watching an interview about the fact that the J.P. Morgan Chase Investment Fund is buying El Paso Electric. These systems are not reliable. And any hope of organizing to provide local alternatives is a much better investment than many other places you could put your money. So you need to start taking it seriously to map your local ecosystems. This is not just a political exercise. It's a real risk issue, because when the system changes or falls apart, you need to know who's who and who you can count on. And you really need to understand what's going on locally, especially if you're going to have J.P. Morgan coming in and buying up the very systems that you're dependent on. There is a great NutriStream video on the Extinction Rebellion, the UK group that is organizing protests and doing lots of street theater to highlight their position that if we don't radically change, the planet's going to die in 12 years. It was very interesting. One of the things TrueStream documented was all the enormous amounts of donations that very wealthy people are giving to the Extinction Rebellion to pay for their street theater. So the one grant was $400,000 so that they could pour red paint on the sidewalk and block people from getting to the hospital or block people from getting to work. These are fantastic amounts of money. While I was listening to it, I was driving through an area between Oregon and Carson City that clearly had been deforested. And I was thinking, you know, that $400,000 could have paid for planting trees, but no, it paid for street theater to pour paint on sidewalks in cities in front of media cameras. nothing to do with any kind of improvement of the environment. Sounds to me like it made it worse, especially when you're throwing red paint on sidewalks that cost municipalities lots of money to clean up. So whatever it's about, it's not about improving the environment, because if you look at what they're doing, it's quite the opposite. But it's a wonderful video that shows you the extraordinary dangers of what I'm referring to these days as the climate op. The UK Labour Party, speaking of using ESG for implementing technocracy, came up with a proposal on their way to the new elections in Britain that companies should be delisted from the London stock market who don't play ball on climate change. Now, London and New York are the financial capitals of the world. If there's, looks like the UK Labour Party is absolutely out to destroy that. Roger Stone was convicted on all counts in his trial. My guess is the Department of Justice is trying to protect the presidency by keeping people like Stone occupied in a way. But they are probably also trying to throw mud up on the wall WikiLeaks. Nobody in Washington and the swamp wants the truth of Seth Rich's death to come out. And of course, we always run the risk that it might. Every time people get more interested in what went on, it seems like the UK and US establishment get more serious about slow killing Assange and making sure the truth of the WikiLeaks involvement with the DNC link just gets, the water gets muddied. Prince Andrew, after having been saved by the suiciding of Epstein, snatched defeat from the jaws of victory by giving an interview to the BBC. Apparently his PR had quit in objection to his doing it, and the Queen staff indicated that she did not approve it being done. It was widely touted as one of the worst PR disasters sort of in the history of PR, and I can see why. I think, you know, the thing that's frightening is it's clear that this is a person who has not a clue what reality is. And if you look at all the different issues on Brexit, et cetera, that the Queen and the royal family is dealing with, you just can't imagine that anyone would be that both stupid and create so much danger and risk for the political position of the royal family. So it's very interesting. One subscriber wrote me a note this afternoon and said, jumping out ahead of it, I'm not going to believe Prince Andrew committed suicide either. It's probably a reference to the, if you were his mother, you'd want to kill him too. John Rubino published a new piece this week, Civil Unrest is the New Normal Out There, and there are an unprecedented amount of serious pushbacks all around the world against technocracy and probably rising food prices as well. The Hong Kong protests continue getting more bitter, ditto with the Yellow Jackets in France, but it's literally all around the world. Another thing that's happening all around the world is the interest in the moon. After the Chinese headline last week and the week before that China was thinking of doing a $10 trillion economic zone on the moon, India announces they're aiming for the next moon landing attempt by November 2020. When we do our space roundup for this annual wrap-up with Dr. Frill, I want to have a serious conversation about all the announcements and headlines on the moon. Very serious fires in Australia, looking very much like California. It's an area down the coast and approaching, getting close to Sydney. It's very large area and very serious. Lots of questions coming from subscribers in Australia, and it wouldn't surprise me, you know, if, because the fires are very contiguous to the area where they want to install the high-speed train, it wouldn't surprise me if there's a connection. Brexit is continuing, and it's both the elections and what Britain is dealing with is very kind of brutal. It's something I want to talk a lot more about with Joseph when we do our wrap up at the end of the year. Some this and that. Scientific American in October just came out with a story or an article in the October issue saying 5G had been proved to be safe. You thought, wow, what happened to Scientific America? Maybe they got tired of being accused as fake science and fake news, but it was a good sign. we have a song. I talked about it last week. Dr. Skidmore's daughter wrote a lovely song about the missing money that we are using as for part of the My 21 2020 campaign. If you haven't watched it, just go to that section of the website. You know, we're trying to come up with a new poster every week. And so the song has been as sort of was this week's offering, and it's very, very cute. So I hope you'll pass it around. When I was talking with one of our teammates about the sort of the meme, My 21 2020, they mentioned a new one called OK Boomer. And that's what you use when, as a millennial, you're criticized by the boomers about what's wrong with you. You just do an OK Boomer. It's like, don't worry about it. It's just the boomers being the boomers. Anyway, I did want to say something because I've watched an unprecedented amount of criticism by boomers of the millennials. And I just have to say, if you look at the, I really believe it's our obligation to leave the world better than we found it for the next generation. And so we have an obligation to leave a world full of great opportunity and a rising popsicle to the millennials. And we didn't do it. We failed. We've done a really, you know, we've had the life of Riley, and now we're leaving a much more limited, constrained, difficult future to the millennials. And so rather than criticize them, I really think we have an obligation to do everything we can to help them and to turn that around. So I appreciate that different generations are different and the boomer culture is different than the millennial culture. But again, let's fulfill our obligation to be the shoulders that lift them up. Billionaire Michael Bloomberg is filing paperwork. He just filed paperwork this week to run for the U.S. president. The Democrats have a real problem, and I think it's one of the reasons they went hard and finally decided to do impeachment against Trump. They don't have a workable candidate yet that the major donors can agree on who can get elected. And supposedly Biden was going to play that role, and it's not working. Speaking of sort of Democrats who are off the charts, Obama came out this week and warned that tech firms are fueling wealth inequality and it could lead to polarization in society. Now, what this tells me is Obama is either a psychopath or the stupidest man alive. So the person who led and made the political, you know, or basically made it politically acceptable to give $24 trillion to the banks, who facilitated the biggest chunk of the $21 trillion to disappear. So that's 24 plus 21 trillion is 45 trillion, who was part of the legalization of usury laws of spending $7 trillion in Middle Eastern wars, doesn't seem to think that his contribution to inequality was arguably one of the most significant, you know, that I could imagine. You know, you don't get a $15 million mansion by the ocean unless you're paid well to lie, and including on climate change. But the hubris of the Washington establishment, you know, so as we watch the Washington establishment criticize Trump, Trump didn't do the $24 trillion in bailouts. Trump didn't do the $21 trillion missing money. Yes, Trump did FASB 56. That's pretty bad. Trump didn't legalize usury. Trump didn't strip bankruptcies from the student loans. Trump didn't spend $7 trillion in Middle Eastern wars. Trump didn't organize, you know, all the false flags that came before Trump. So, you know, there's nothing more amazing than watching Colin Powell or Condoleezza Rice lecture Trump about his diplomacy. Trump didn't, you know, lie about weapons of mass destruction so he could start $7 trillion of wars. He's trying to say, get out of it. So there's a multiple personality disorder going on in Washington. Washington doesn't like the fact that Trump is transparent, and Trump is not, his style can be very, very off-putting. You know, Trump and I could probably last in a room together for at most 5 minutes. You know, we would end up, he's not somebody I could work with. So I just, you know, I don't get along with that kind of style, and a lot of people don't. But if you look at the actions and you look at not whether or not, you were gracious and polished in your process of starting a $7 trillion war that killed millions of people and failed to execute properly on the unipolar opportunity. I would say I'll take Trump style any day. There is a real serious breakdown at the heart of the American empire. There's no doubt about that. Our hero this week, speaking of transparency, is Zach Voorhees, who is the Google whistleblower, who was interviewed by Project Veritas, but he just did a new interview with Marcola, which was very good. It's up on the website. He gets deeply into the censorship of the economic healthcare solutions. And he really dives into sort of the censorship and the kind of things that are going on at Google. And I think it's worth watching to understand how many economic healthcare solutions there are if you really take the time to research and learn and try things. But it also gives you a sense of the kind of censorship that's going on in the system. And if you've been with the Salary Report for a while, you already know that. But it's always good to be reminded. I'm always shocked by the people who think it's okay to use Gmail or it's okay to use Google Works or different Google Circles or Google Dive. You know, I don't understand all the products because I have nothing to do with Google and I have nothing to do with Facebook. But if you're still in the Google trance, you need to break out of it. Our blast from the past is a report that we did with the General Counsel, Carolyn Betts, several years ago. Legal pathways for entrepreneurs to raise capital using securities. Does crowdfunding ease the way? It also has links to other special reports we did on state crowdfunding laws. And it lays out all the different pathways for entrepreneurs to raise capital using securities that would be applicable in a small offering or a local offering. And it's time to get serious about circulating equity capital locally and building the kind of capacity we need locally for housing, for energy, for all sorts of different things, because we need to make sure technology allows you to bring things down to a much smaller footprint on an economic basis, but it requires organization. And it's a much better use, I think, for capital to make sure that you have resilient supply of whether it's food or energy or water or anything else. Every place is different. Every circumstance is different. One of the things I used to often do, and it was inspired by my uncle, is that in a lot of areas you have good local economic development loan funds, which can be a reasonable investment opportunity, but you also have things like food co-ops that are always needing lines of credit and to borrow, and with or without the local banks, you can participate. And I've seen it happen all over the country. But check it out, Legal Pathways for Entrepreneurs to Raise Capital Using Securities. It was done a couple years ago, so I'm sure there are updates, but it'll certainly get you going and understand the basic pathways of raising capital using securities. Anyway, we're going to need to circulate equity capital much more locally, so take a look. Take action. I'm adding a new section to Money and Markets where I'm just going to draw from our website and point you to some of the great take action things we have. One is find a local bank. If you don't have a local bank who offers you a real relationship where you can know your banker, know your decision makers, know if they finance your mortgage, where that mortgage is going to go, who's going to service it. Hopefully they will service it. You need to have a relationship with a local bank you can trust. So I put a link in the commentary to find a local bank. Obviously, I bank at the National Bank of Malvern. It's owned and operated by my cousins. They are invited to join us at our tea in Malvern on December 20th, so you'll get a chance. I've asked them to give us a tour of the bank so you can see the world's smallest community bank, but I have to tell you, it's the best bank I've ever banked at. I think it's terrific. Let's go to the movies. The movie this week is Cold Pursuit, starring Liam Neeson. I never thought I would like this movie. I got talked into watching it. It's a black comedy set in Colorado, but it is a fantastic example of two things that I wanted to mention to you. One is the Midianite thing, which is a reference to the story of Gideon where the bad guys start killing each other. The good guys turn up the vibration level, and bam, the bad guys start killing each other. And it's a beautiful example of the Midianite thing happening. And I'll say no more. I think the beauty of the Gideon army story is to remind us that the bad guys absolutely could kill each other. So it's a great example of the Midianite thing. But the other thing it's a great example of is something is sort of a dark topic that I think it's important we need to face. Whenever I hear talk about a dollar reset or implosion of the dollar, people say, well, should I be in gold? Should I be in cash? I don't think you're thinking about this in the right way. The number one issue you need to think about is security, because it is in those environments where organized crime and Gladio kind of operations start to impinge, the cash becomes more, you know, and the black budget folks become more dependent on drugs, mortgage fraud, and it's like a cancer that spreads through the system. And Cold Pursuit is really a story of the organized crime growing and becoming more powerful and basically overrunning law enforcement and the rule of law. And Saker, in his most recent interview, said the big issue in America is going to be, are we going to be a country of laws or not? And I see, whether it's covert operations or organized crime or a combination of both, impinging all across the country. And that's my concern if things really get rough, those networks, many of which are, I think, run and influenced by defense contractors and other sort of corporate entities and banks involved in the black budget, I think they're going to be a real risk. And Cold Pursuit explores that issue. And so I think it helps us think about what could be some of the enforcement issues that we have to figure out a way for our communities to have or provide, because we've taken much of that for granted, and I don't believe we can necessarily take that for granted in the future. Our interview this week is with Jason Bawden-Smith. Jason is an incredible entrepreneur. He's an environmental scientist and author. He's a frequent guest on the Salyer Report. You can't have a better source on 5G, but more importantly, on how we stay healthy. And Jason has worked hard to understand this and knows a lot about how to strengthen your immunity for the wear and tear of invasive technology and mitigate your exposure. So it's so important to me that you learn about biophysics, and Jason is a great source, as is Ulrich Groniger. If you look at Ulrich's presentations for Future Science, very much organized around biophysics. And of course, that's going to be the major discussion at the Hang in 2020. Jason, Ulrich, and I talking about biophysics and consciousness and spiritual warfare. Anyway, biophysics, if you understand biophysics, there's so much that we can do for our health and for ourselves with our health in this environment. And I think it's absolutely critical to do that. It's one of the most important set of tools you need to kind of navigate the road ahead. Okay, ask Catherine lots of questions. They're all in the notes, and I'm going to just summarize many of the longer ones. A comment on the Vitruvian Man theory related to the Da Vinci Vitruvian Man, which I just got a chance to see at the Louvre. Oh, it's beautiful. I've placed that at the end of the script, but you can see the note at the beginning. Hi, Catherine. Except for Salieri, I'm done with all the false hopes for any meaningful political change. QAnon, 50,000 plus sealed indictments, draining the swamp, it's all just around the corner, Hillary being perp walk, Gitmo for the bad guys, make America great again for the long run, etc. Trump has had huge resistance and has accomplished a lot of very good things. However, it's been 3 years and Trump hasn't been able to bring any real justice to the swamp. It seems to be stronger and deeper than ever, and he seems to be 20 senators away from being removed, and then it's some real dark times ahead. So in order to keep my sanity, I'm removing myself from all the political soap opera and only listen to Salieri, detach and insulate, and continue on. Yes, continue on the things that make real difference. Start mapping your local ecosystem. Here's what Putin's comment communicated. What he was saying is the U.S. population will not push the red button or turn it green, so the global community is going to push it instead. That means you and I better get ready to turn it green. Catherine, do you think negative interest rates will come to the U.S.? I know that I'm sure the Fed does not want to go there, so I don't think it's likely, certainly in the immediate future. But we're in a situation where anything is possible. If they do go there, it's simply to supply the government with helicopter money. And of course, it'll end up getting passed through in some circumstances. So, you know, Germany is putting out negative interest rate mortgages and things of that kind. So it's happening. If it does happen, unfortunately, it's going to be central banks printing money and essentially buying up and controlling the whole economy. So think of this as a sort of inadvertent way for the central banks to implement communism. Then you said, if so, what would some investing strategies to consider if this were to occur? P.S. I had the pleasure of hearing you speak at the recent Portland event. Just want to thank you for coming to the Pacific Northwest. I would say there, again, as I said earlier, it's very important to look at all the things you need: land, shelter, energy, food, water. So I'll call that resiliency, and start financing that, and start financing local community activities, whether it's a local loan fund, whether it's the local co-op, whether it's trustworthy family, friends, or local young people who are worthy of helping get a startup going. I also believe in solid companies. If you do the stock market, you just need to have global diversification, and you need to decide whether or not you want to hedge or not. Hedge portfolios are one of the ways of dealing with the uncertainty in the environment. Obviously, you give up yield on the upside, but you protect yourself on the downside. But I would start with yourself and work in concentric circles out through your ecosystem and building the resilience you need to provide for all the basics of life. And after that, I would look for companies that create resiliency, you know, in their ecosystems and in their world, and there are plenty of them. I spend a lot of good time looking for good companies, and it's amazing how many there are out there who don't, that we never hear from. They're just busy doing their thing. If you have enough money to do more than one place, it's always good to have more than one jurisdiction and to have assets in more than one jurisdiction, because as you can see, many jurisdictions can go bad in this environment. I got a message saying administrator has blocked my IP from your site from both Safari and also from Firefox. I was able to get in using Firefox after getting locked out from Safari yesterday, but today I'm totally locked out. So we've worked with you. If this happens to you, make sure your password's valid. You can change your password to make sure. But if you have a Microsoft system, you may have a virus. So please make sure, get off of Microsoft and get onto Ubuntu desktop, or make sure your virus software is current and up to date. Again, get serious about cybersecurity. Hi, Catherine. Thanks to you, I've recognized that my research in the new field of cognitive science rediscovered what Leonardo da Vinci perfected 500 years ago. I've now written a book about how we can think, learn, and communicate more effectively by following Leonardo's codes. What's your suggestion about self-publishing a book versus removing controversial content to make a book acceptable to a mainstream publisher? I don't think there's any point in trying to get along with mainstream publishers. I would keep your content to a very high standard of integrity, and then I would explore, one, I would want to make sure I own the copyright, so I would self-publish. But sometimes publishers will do a distribution deal and help you on all the distribution issues in those parts. So I would look for a small independent who might do that, or a small independent publisher will publish but let you keep the copyright. And then some more on Da Vinci. It sounds wonderful. The next is a long dialogue, a back and forth between me and a subscriber who became an ex-subscriber, who I would say has been digesting way too much entrainment about the impeachment and Trump, and is adamant that I need to, what did he say? If you are true to your values, it's time to denounce Trump and call for his removal or defeat. Now, it wouldn't surprise me if the entrainment was hot and heavy to try and target people who are perceived to be Trump supporters. I mean, this is a major, major effort that is going on here. My attitude, and I wrote back, you'll see, I said, in my opinion, the most powerful and important criticism of both the Trump administration and the Congress, both Republican and Democrats in the last 2 years, has come from Dr. Mark Skidmore and myself. Then I put a link to caveat emptor, why investors need to do due diligence on U.S. Treasury and related securities. Anyway, but, you know, one of the things I said is, you know, I voted for Trump because my choice was Trump or Clinton, and Trump was preferable to Clinton. Now, I think impeaching Trump is a dreadful idea. If you want to get rid of Trump, then you get rid of him in election, and the way you get rid of him in election is by running somebody who's a better candidate. And the notion that that this is the way you're going to get rid of Trump, if you look at, as far as I'm concerned, what Trump has done is not an impeachable, or the thing he's being accused of is not an impeachable action. And if it is impeachable action, then everybody in the Congress, or not everybody, but more than two-thirds of the Congress and all the presidents of the last, you know, 20 years should be put in jail. So the hypocrisy here is unbelievably off the charts. And, you know, there's no doubt that there's a lot of anger at Trump, but a lot of it is because he's very transparent and because of, you know, his style choices. The other thing is, there's no doubt he's run some very good people out of his administration. And I, you know, he's just not a good manager. And he's not a good manager of people. He's a real estate developer. He's an entrepreneur. So Trump can be his own worst enemy. But the question before us is not, should we stand up and throw Trump out? His question is, do you want Mike Pence to be president? No, I'd much prefer for Trump to be president. I also think that he was elected president. If you're going to throw him out, you have to win in the election fair and square. So, but I have to tell you, I'm getting sick of being bullied about Trump, whether it's bullied for Trump or bullied against Trump. If you look at what has to happen in this country to turn things around, we have to take an interest in bottom-up political control. Everybody in Washington is a member of the pro-centralization team. Everybody in Washington works for the pro-centralization team. I don't care who it is. So if you want to change things, you've got to shift 3,100 counties one county at a time. I was struck. I drove from Idaho across the Oregon border into Baker County, Oregon, and I stopped at a local kind of 7-Eleven and went in and said to the guy behind the cash register, what county am I in? And he didn't know. I knew it was Baker County. And the woman next to him said, oh, this is Baker County. I said, what's the county seat? And he looked at me, he said, what's a county seat? Now, we were standing across the block from the courthouse, and it pretty much looked like Baker City, which we were in, was the county seat. So then he looked at me and he said, Portland. Well, Portland was on the other side of the state. I said, no, the county seat would be in the county here. And then the woman next to him said, oh, we're in Baker City. That's the county. She knew. But it was frightening to me how many people don't know what county they're in. They don't know what the county seat of their county is. They have no idea how the local ecosystems is. And I assure you, the deep state controls one county at a time. That's how you control the federal credit, one county at a time. And so if we are obsessed with what's going on in Washington and are not prepared to re-engineer and take over our counties one county at a time, ain't no solutions. You have to push the red button. You have to turn the red button green one county at a time. It's a bottom-up kind of thing. So if you're obsessed with Trump and you're not obsessed with how the money works locally, you have a problem, and it's called entrainment. Okay, I'll get off my soapbox. Howdy, I see that Kash Patel is suing Politico because of their false stories, which leads me to ask this question. Why did Amazon lose Jedi? Could it be that Amazon Washington Post has been included in the Durham's expanded criminal investigation? Are we going to see Mockingbird 2 in the near future? Amazon lost because Gates figured out how to make it worth Trump's while to swing it to Microsoft. That's why Gates lost. I also think the deep state, including Buffett, feels much more comfortable with Gates creating and operating the post-FASB 56 system, because that's exactly what you're looking at. You're looking at the train tracks on which the reengineering of government at the deepest level will occur. Amazon has the intelligence agencies, and Microsoft now will have DOD. Remember, Norquist is the deputy at DOD. He engineered FASB 56. First, he engineered the audit, then he engineered FASB 56. Now he's engineered JEDI. The question is, what was the real deal? My message to Trump is that if DOD awards the contract and signs it before the impeachment process is over, Gates will have a headshot and may easily take it. So if I was Trump, there's no way I would permit this contract to be signed until the impeachment process is well over. Okay, next question. I'm re-listening to the exciting 2018 first quarter wrap-up. You even admit in it that you don't know for sure who controls our SES system, whether it's under the control of Mr. Global or not. Then you go on to defend the SES that we need to remain in place to protect us. That seems to be a contradiction to me, since by your own admission, you don't even know who Mr. Global is in the first place. No, it's not an admission whatsoever. Here's how it works. There are almost 8,000 SES. The SES is the sort of Mandarin class of the civil service. Control is exercised one person at a time. If Mr. Global controls, when you say Mr. Global controls the SES system, that means Mr. Global has a control file on every one of the 8,000 people, or has mind controlled them, or both, and controls them through those elements. Or it could be 4,000 or 2,000, but it happens one person and one control file at a time. So the reason I don't know who controls the SES system is I don't know how many have been mind controlled. I don't know how many have control files, and I don't know how powerful and effective that mind control is and the control file is. It's very granular. Now, unless you can protect the SES system or anybody who runs any of those operations from covert ops, from mind control, from entrainment, from assassination, they will get compromised. Doesn't matter whether, you know, what the bureaucratic system is, they're going to get compromised. So you have to be able to protect them against that. Now, a civil service will tend to follow the written rules. It takes a lot of control files and mind control to get the written rules just ignored. And it's one of the reasons we know about the 21 trillion undocumented adjustments, because they tend to publish the numbers because they're following the written rules. Anyway, in my experience, the civil service is a major protection relative to the banks and corporations, because the banks and corporations are much freer to operate outside of FOIA and other transparency laws, and don't feel any obligation to follow the written rules. So to me, if you're going to run a healthy system, a clean civil service is the best, with limited use of private banks and corporations. A compromised civil service is the next best. It's clearly not as preferable as a clean civil service. So to me, the issue is, do you have a civil service or not? The question is, if you have a civil service, why not clean it up? And why not make it possible for those people to be protected from covert operations? If the Mossad is going to get everybody addicted using entrainment to pornography and then get them into sites with underage actresses and get a control file on all of them, you know, for God's sakes, you have a CIA, protect them from the Mossad, please. Anyway, so the next best thing is a compromised civil service with limited use of private banks and corporations. No civil service with the government run entirely by corporations and the bank is the worst. If you look at the deterioration and debasement of government, it has absolutely tracked banks and corporations being allowed to do the most private, most powerful, most important, most classified operations. It's the single most corrupting influence. Is the more power the banks and corporations have, the more they're able to corrupt the civil service, the work it gets. So the solution is to clean up the civil service and protect them from the covert operations. It's not to say, oh, government is bad, the civil service is bad, let's turn the whole thing over to the banks and corporations who corrupted it in the first place. It's nuts. You know, it's funny, I was watching Martin Armstrong talk about why everybody wanted to invest in corporations because government is so hopeless and corrupt. Who do you think corrupted it? Who do you think made it hopeless? It was those very banks and corporations. FYI, I put the statistics on the SES system in the from OPM website in the notes. Hi, Catherine. It's wonderful to meet you and other subscribers of the Portland event. And then you sent a link to one of the Body Electric Summit interviews. I'm dying to see that. It looks great. And another one that may be of use to the folks in California, Australia, dealing with the smoke inhalation. Finally, you said, will you share with me your assessment of the pulsed harmonic PEMF device in general and compared to the QRS system? The QRS, which is a quantron resonance system, I've used for many years and I'm very comfortable with it. I have the pulse harmonic, which the people who introduced me to it swear by it, and I've committed to give it a real serious try, but I haven't done it as yet, so I can't really tell you anything about it other than to say that the people who introduced me really are very confident and happy with it. Anyway, but, you know, so I would think if you're looking for one of those systems that you might try both of them. Hi, Catherine. I'm a new subscriber. This was a question we got before, but it related to local investment. And I just wanted to remind you, if you go to the library, we do have a Salieri report on investment circles. So please make sure you check that out. Catherine, per your recommendation, I read Operation Gladio by Paul Williams, astounding amount of evil hidden in plain sight. Could not sleep well if I read it late at night. Can you recommend any books or websites to back up your contention that the big Democratic donors are pushing transgender, transhumanism, pedophilia, and occult practices? I only look at those early in the morning. All of my information comes from many different sources. It's not one piece organized together. There are several articles that I've posted on the groups of people financing the transgender movement, and it's a surprisingly small group of people, but very much on the Democratic side. So you ought to be able to pick those up on searches, either of the website, just put in transgender, or general searches on the internet. If you look at a lot of the information about art collections and the related parties in the Pizzagate coverage, forget the controversy of what was true or not. If you just look at the art and some of the related parties and behaviors, it was very much on the Democratic side, and you see an unbelievable streak of very bizarre stuff. My guess is a lot of the art collections are used as a signal that either the people involved are mind-controlled or have been participating in ceremonies that include human sacrifice. I think it's pretty perverted. Then if you look at the companies that I am guessing are probably running the entrainment, the kind of entrainment that persuades kids that they want at a young age to do things like hormones and sex change, they tend to go very much to that big Democratic donor side. And then if you look at the push in the Obama administration for the transgender bathrooms and the fury that it was causing. Anyway, so it's a combination of many different sort of small items that build up to a clear impulse that's coming from a certain direction. As you can see, I didn't mention, I would say on pedophilia and occult, that's been significant on both sides of the aisle. So I don't see that as being distinctly just the Democratic donors. Although if you look at certain networks on the Democratic side, they're pretty openly proposing, you know, drops in age related to consensual sex. And some even have promoted, the Zionist networks have promoted pedophilia for a long time. Anyway, so I hope that's helpful. Per your recommendation, I watched the Richard Dolan documentaries on false flags. Do you believe that Sandy Hook might have been a false flag? I assume that it was a false flag, whether it was a violent covert operation or just simply staged. Then you say, my wife says that such speculation is right-wing garbage. It sounds to me like you need to cleanse your home of TVs, Wi-Fis, screens, etc. Do you recommend James Fetzer's book on this subject? Any other books or websites? Sandy Hook is a topic I avoid. You could spend thousands of hours and not figure it out and not make a whole lot of progress. And even if you did, it's not going to make a significant difference. If you wanted to make a difference on false flags, you would go at it another way. Anyway, it's one of the reasons I believe investing and trying to make progress on the missing money, because the missing money is highly documented, the numbers don't lie, and you're just standing on very solid ground that relates to everybody. There are a lot of people who can't relate to false flags or school shootings. The missing money touches everyone. And you can get something real accomplished, like political protection on the pension funds or serious reform and protection of the beneficiaries. So, or mapping your local ecosystem and protecting personal and community resilience. That's a much better use of your time. Just think that you're going to go nowhere on Sandy Hook. Lastly, in view of your understanding of 9/11, would you care to comment on the Cantor Fitzgerald Opportunity Zone joint venture with Silverstein Properties? You know, what can I say? When I saw that, it just, you know, it took financial Stockholm syndrome to a whole new level. You said, I'm sure you know all the relevant facts. I haven't looked at the prospectus. So if this is something that you're interested in, if you would send me the prospectus, or if it's up available on the web, I'd be happy to, if you just send me the link, but I'd be happy to take a look at it to see what I can make of it. Anyway, so if you can get me the documents, I will take a look. And then you finish, I spend a lot of time listening and reading what you have to say, and I would like to understand it better. My vote is Sandy Hook is not a good investment of your time, but I might start with what Sophia Smallstorm has written about. I think she wrote about Sandy Hook and some of the other false flags. So I would start with Sophia Smallstorm. Dear Kath and I, opened my Bible and Psalm 91 appeared. Your Twitter comment about the CEO edited the news in the backlash when you posted the truth. This was the message, and you printed Psalm 91, which I love. It's very appropriate. Then someone else sent another YouTube about 5G, and I've put that in the notes. So that's it for tonight. A very exciting lineup. We have Thomas Meyer, Journey to Chartres, next week for Thanksgiving. Then the wellness series Breathwork with Bridget Mouchot. I am concerned about diminishing oxygen in the atmosphere, and I think breath work and making sure you're getting plenty of oxygen is extremely important to wellness. Then the state of our currency. Now's the appropriate time to really make a serious comment about currency. And then for the annual wrap-up, we'll have the completion of Deep State Tactics 101. A lot more to say there, and then we'll roll it up for the annual wrap-up. And of course, coming into Christmas, we have the best of the Solari Report. So December is going to be a very exciting month. So, oh, and I should mention, we have all our wrap-ups in hard copy are in Christmas and holiday packages. So it's a great, you know, give the gift of actionable intelligence. It's a great gift. And check out the packages at the store. So I'll be joining you next week with Thomas Meyer, and then my next Money in Markets will be the first week in December. So again, for those of you in the United States who are celebrating Thanksgiving, have a wonderful Thanksgiving. And until we speak again, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Good night and good luck.